Welcome to the Global Marketing Show, the podcast for all things international business. I'm your host, Wendy Pease, president of Rapport International and a translation expert. Come along with me today as we talk to an expert in the global marketing world about facing their biggest fears, hearing about mistakes they made or saw, discussing best practices, and sharing fun travel language and culture stories. Welcome, everybody, to this episode of the Global Marketing Show podcast. I've got Allison Hodson today from Zag, who is a specialist in getting companies to think bigger and to realize that borders don't matter. So welcome, Allison.
Good morning, Wendy.
So tell me about helping companies think bigger.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things that's always been a passion of mine is great, and we always want to help to support and grow local businesses and make sure people are supporting local. But another piece of that is helping local businesses get to other markets, whether those markets are just other markets in Alberta, other markets in Canada, or beyond that. You know, we always encourage clients, if they have a product or service that makes sense, to look at thinking a bit bigger.
Okay, so tell me more about your company, and then let's talk about some examples of where you've done that with some clients.
Sure, so we're a full service marketing and advertising firm. We're based in Edmonton, Alberta, and we also have an office in Toronto. And we've been around for 11 years, and this year has been an interesting one, as I'm sure it's been for every business. It's just the way it is right now. So we're very happy and fortunate to be able to work from home and to be able to continue our business and to be able to work with wonderful clients.
Good. And so it's Zag or Zag Creative? I should know that, but I had.
Oh, yeah. Well, we went down the road years ago to shortening it to Zag Creative. And then just as of last year, we've rebranded and taken it down to Zag. So we've, over the years, just dropped more and more of our name until we've ended up at Zag.
Oh, that sounds very efficient. I like that. And that's a really nice brand name too. It's short, direct, to the point, and memorable. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So when you say full service marketing agency, tell me what that includes.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I think that for us, it's anything that touches your product or service and needs to get your message out to the market. So that could be anything from, I mean, these days there's obviously a lot of digital included in that. So building websites, lead generation, pay-per-click marketing, search engine optimization, social media management and content, all the way down to branding, campaign planning, media planning for the traditional, in the traditional sense, as well as the digital sense. Mm-hmm. And also public relations, photography, videography. So really anything, again, that is communicating, getting your message out to your markets. And that's different for every client.
All right. So can you tell us about a client that you helped to get them to think bigger across borders, or some experiences in that area?
Yeah, there's a client actually that we're working with right now that I can touch on. And, you know, he is in the prebiotics business. So similar to probiotics, but just a little bit different. And, you know, we're helping him establish his business here in Edmonton, Alberta, homegrown, and basically find his customer base, but to look much bigger than that. So one of the things that we try to work with clients on, and we're working with this client on, is really thinking about how large can you go? And it's not about going big quickly. I mean, I want to really correct that. I don't think it's, you know, you should launch your product and get into every market you can immediately. Mm-hmm. But it's laying the groundwork to think longer term towards that. I think it's making sure that where that client wants to go, that we're aware of, similar to your business, right? Like what the cultural language is in these places, how the brand is affected as they move into these markets, what potential success could look like, what the barriers are. One of the things we also, and we're looking at this with this client and other clients that we work with, are specifically around grant funding, what are government subsidies that they can take advantage of in order to move their product into other markets. So it's really important for us, on the ground level of working with clients, to understand what their plans for growth are and to help them know that it's possible and realize that it's something that they can do if they really want to do it, and help give them some of those resources.
Okay, so this prebiotics company that you're working with, so there's a ton of marketing that they could do right in Alberta, and they probably have a huge market because everybody's heard about probiotics, but they're really in a new area. So talk to me about their journey, about how they decide when to expand outside that area, and when they'd start thinking about different markets, and how you'd guide them on thinking about where to go.
Yeah, like I think every client's different, to be honest. I mean, their journey's different, their cash flow's different, their risk profile is different in terms of what they're willing to do. So when we work to guide clients on this journey, there's a big piece of it that has to come around collaboration and a lot of fact finding in terms of what their resources are, where they're going to be able to go, and what their risk temperature is on that as well. For us, it involves research into other markets in terms of where there's saturation in terms of that product at this time, right? So prebiotics specifically, is that something that's, you know, really big in Europe right now? Is that something, you know, where there's a need for it? Is it a saturated market? So we like to look into those types of things. One of the examples I really kind of go to is, so one of the smallest distilleries here in Alberta, Strathcona Spirits, now has their product in Tokyo. And that was actually done through the TAP program, which I can talk about a little bit, but that's the TAP program that used to be through Edmonton Economic Development and is now with the Edmonton Chamber of Commerce. And what's interesting about that story is there, like, imagine a little distillery that just opened their doors, you know, was looking at doing what they loved and selling their craft in market. And, you know, with a little bit of thinking bigger and a little bit of assistance from some programs and, you know, really believing in what they did, here they are selling their product in Tokyo, right? So that to me is a testament to how we all should be thinking about being larger than just our local markets if we can be.
How did they end up in Tokyo of all places?
You know, I wish I could tell you the answer to that, because I wasn't involved in their journey. I just know some people who were. And, you know, I would guess that, you know, going through the program that they went with Economic Development Edmonton and probably looking into markets where there was a need for that, probably being involved on a trade mission, they just kind of ended up there. You know, it's similar to work that we ended up doing in the Middle East based on a trade mission that I went on with Edmonton Economic Development as well. So sometimes it's about having those partners that help you on that journey as well.
So tell us more about the trade show you did in the Middle East.
Yeah, it was wonderful, actually. Lisa Baroldi, who used to work for Edmonton Economic Development, called me up. This must have been 5 or 6 years ago now, I would say, maybe 4 or 5. Time flies. And she had said, do you want to come to Dubai and Abu Dhabi on a trade mission? And I said, wow, I've never even thought about those markets. And she actually got me thinking bigger of, you know, there's agencies, you know, that do work there. You don't need to be local. And she put together this trade mission that was really unique at the time. So normally a trade mission, you would have, you know, say oil and gas companies would all go together, or land developers would all go together. But she put together a mission that was very unique in terms of, we had a hospitality sector that came with us. And then we had a creative sector, like creative and advertising, and then a development sector. So we had some architects with us and some developers. So what was really neat about this is that we were kind of looking at how are the ways that, you know, hospitality, creativity, and development could all work together to create economy. And that's kind of something that is, you know, is and was being done in Dubai in terms of some of their areas that they've set up there. So the trade mission, I said yes. It was incredibly interesting. I think we were down there for 2.5 weeks. It was a long mission. It was a long trip. but was able to learn so much, was able to make some connections in business that we still have today. It was wonderful, and it opened my eyes to a definite different side of the planet.
So going on that trade mission was really the start of you thinking bigger and realizing how much more is out there.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely got my brain going. One of the things that I really noticed on this trade mission, you know, and candidly speaking, going down there thinking, wow, that's like Dubai, like everyone, you know, at the time that I had talked to you, Dubai is this big place and things are done very differently there. And you know, everything in Dubai, like the Burj Khalifa, like everything is the biggest, the best, you know, the most extravagant. And so, you know, it was daunting. But through the mission and through meeting the local people there, whether they were expats or locals that had, you know, kind of always been there, everyone was wonderful. And it wasn't scary, and it wasn't what I thought it was. And I think more than it opening my eyes to how big of a world is out there and how much more we can do if we just want to do it. It just kind of made me realize that there's also a lot of similarities, right? Like people, when you go down there and you make business connections, people just want to do business with people, right? Like it's no different than what I've experienced in other markets. Good people with similar values and ethics are attracted to similar people. And those are the people that do business together. And I think we can all recognize now, especially with COVID, that technology, Zoom, we can all do business all over the world, and we're just making that connection with people. So it was great. And Lisa was so wonderful and instrumental in changing my way of thinking. You know, and one of the things that we went down there about was, you know, the world needs a little more Edmonton, right? Like, you know, Edmonton talking about Alberta, and many people were like, where? And so it was about, you know, we had actually a couple city councilors that came with us as well, from Edmonton City Council. And, you know, we did a lot of activities just kind of informing people about what we have to offer here. So it's just like anything, it's about getting your message out, I suppose.
So there was a dual mission there. Was part of it was to get you business in other areas, but also to have people recognize as Edmonton as a place to come and do business.
Absolutely. Yeah. Bring your development here, you know, think about bringing your business here, because just as much as, you know, we help companies, think bigger to move to other markets, there's a big piece of what we do is, you know, we can also help other markets come here, right? Because once you have someone on the ground in your jurisdiction, we understand the nuances of the communities that we're in. We understand some of the things that may not be as obvious from someone working abroad. So it definitely was a dual purpose.
Right. And so you said you made a lot of connections and met great people while you were there. Have you been able to leverage that into some possible business or getting clients or?
Yeah, we really were. And it was pretty extraordinary. I mean, like I said, it must've been 4 or 5 or 6 years ago, somewhere in there. And I mean, just the other day, someone that I'd made a really great connection with had gotten contact with me again. We hadn't talked in about a year, and, you know, was talking about doing a bit of a climate marathon. It's called Climathon, and bringing in different people from markets across the world to kind of submit their ideas for different sectors, whether that be agriculture or, food, just lots of different, verticals in terms of, you know, making a difference in the world. And so he had reached out, and we're now talking about some further collaboration. So it's, people just do business with people, right? And if you keep in touch and you do good work, I think that pays off in spades.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So are you doing anything as follow-up or in addition to reach out to clients that are international?
I think that right now, and we talked about this a little bit in some of our, you know, kind of pre-work of deciding what we were going to talk about today. COVID, as we've gone through this year, I think we were seeing this huge increase in people wanting to go to other markets, being more interested in it. Globalization, especially in our market, became, you know, a bigger and less scary word, and a bit of a bigger movement. But so then COVID hits, and now we're in a place where, okay, we saw that there were some issues with maybe borders being closed and things being available to us that were available to us before. And, you know, that was interesting to me, because it almost went from, you know, this globalization and export, now almost more back to localization, right? So we're going to manufacture our own products. We're going to make sure that there's a balance between what we export, but that we save enough for ourselves. And I think specifically in Alberta, you know, being as resource rich as we are with everything from lumber to oil and gas, you know, it will be interesting to see. And I'm trying to follow the trends on where that's going. And I feel like it's a little bit up in the air right now. And it will be interesting to see, especially with our partners in the United States, what trade will look like, especially with the change in leadership happening in January. So it's kind of a to be determined, but I know that you know, the federal government is obviously very interested in seeing exports continue to grow, because it just helps feed our economy. So
Right. Yeah. And I think when you and I had talked before, you were talking about expansionism and isolationism and what, yeah, you want to talk a little bit more about that?
It's really just a bit of an expansion on what I just talked about. Like I think that COVID has changed, and this is no secret, and we've all talked about COVID ad nauseum, I'm sure, how we all interact, how we do business, how we shop, right? You know, it's the difference between shopping online or going down to your local store to support them. I mean, especially in our market, you know, we've seen a lot of small business owners undergo incredible tension, you know, with several shutdowns that we've had, you know, inability to sell their products, the necessity to shift to an online model to continue to live. And then you see on the flip side of that, the Amazons of the world. I mean, I know even in my building, even last night, I'd come home and it was just like Amazon package, Amazon package, Amazon package. And, you know, which, you know, when you talk about, you know, isolation versus opening up, it will be very fascinating for me. And I'm not an economist, nor am I, you know, a psychic in terms of where this will leave us, but I do know that it will leave us in a different place than we were in the beginning, obviously. And I hope, and this is just my own personal wish, is that we don't go to buying everything online and, you know, only shopping at Amazon. And I've seen it through Christmas this year with lots of people that I know that just say, oh, I just bought everything online. I bought everything through Amazon. And I get it, right? Because people don't feel comfortable going into stores because COVID is rampant. But I think we have to be aware of the effect it has on local business and local businesses' ability to be able to continue to survive. And they're the backbone of our society. I'm actually curious, because you're in Colorado?
Outside of Boston in Massachusetts.
Oh, gosh. What is local business like there for you? I'm just curious. Like, do you see the same thing?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Everybody's shopping online and Amazon is suffering. And I mean, Amazon is the go-to place and the businesses are shutting. And I've just seen a ton of closing. And I just heard a local restaurant in town is shutting for the winter. They'll open back up because they just didn't feel like they were getting enough business to support it. So I don't know where we'll come out of this. And I can't figure out with the restaurants whether it's the chains that are going to make it or suffer more. But I hear the local restaurants are having a lot of hard times. So I don't know how we're going to come out of it. Yeah. But I do know that the companies that can sell online, like we've got clients, we've got manufacturers, we've got people that are, instead of selling and flying all over the world and meeting in person, they're turning to online. I mean, and learning how to bring the buyer through the buyer's journey. and reach people that they might not have reached before.
Mm-hmm.
So you were going to make recommendations for a company that wanted to do that, transition from face-to-face selling to going online. What would you recommend?
I mean, I think that if companies aren't making that transition to go online and to change their business model, they're going to be in trouble. That's just a reality. I don't think that it's going to be viable to not look at doing those things. So I think it's important. I think it's really important for clients to understand who their true target market is. And I think right now, how that target market is shifting their buying patterns, you know, are they the people that, you know, want to come in, touch, feel, because I know those people are still out there. Or are they the people that want to click and have things delivered to their door? And if they have both of those people in their purview, how can they make sure that both of them can still remain serviced? And how does that help, I guess, bolster their bottom line without taking away too many resources? Because if you have to have a storefront, but then you also have online, I think that's obviously completely doable. And a lot of businesses do that. But the challenge right now is that a lot of businesses can't be open, so they can't have people coming in. So do you still have a lease you have to, you know, pay for? How long are there subsidies coming in for that? So, you know, the advice I would give is definitely look at getting online, you know, and it's not just through online sales, but it's through online marketing and branding. What's your presence on social media? What does your brand say? What does it stand for? One of the things that we see as a bit of a faux pas sometimes with clients is that they think just getting on social media just because they need to be on there is good enough. Mm-hmm. But it's no different than, you know, you wouldn't just throw a billboard up without any thought or strategy or brand behind it. You wouldn't just, you know, pay money to put a billboard on a main street unless there was thought and strategy behind it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think social media, just because it's so easy, you know, and it's not free, or it is free, where, like, you know, traditional media, if you buy radio spots or you do billboards, aren't. So you put a little bit more into what you're putting out because you think you're, you know, well, you are spending money on it. I think with social media, what gets lost is that people just kind of throw a message out because it's easy and it's free, and they don't realize that they're missing a huge opportunity by still crafting that story and message and making it all match.
So you work with a large pizza place, and they mm-hmm. do marketing and I know the name of it. I didn't know if you wanted to share it or not.
Yeah, no, that's okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. We work with Papa John's Pizza across Canada.
Okay. So you work with Papa John's, and they market both in English and in French. Can you talk to me about how they handle the two languages and where, how they go about developing that strategy in English and French and online and in person?
Sure. Yeah. So they market in French specifically in one of their newer markets, which is in Montreal. So very French focused, French speaking. So when we take new products, and in fact, we're going through one right now, to that market, we have to make sure that the translation is handled properly. We have to make sure that, you know, I'm sure as you would know in your business, you do translations. You know, there are people out there that think marketing through a different language is literally just putting it into Google and clicking a button, which I'm sure you will know is very dangerous sometimes, because there's different nuances and different like ways of saying things. So, you know, we have to make sure that we're looking at, you know, the language that's being translated properly into that market. There's obviously also a lot of nuances in terms of what's printed on the pizza boxes in that market, how it's printed on the pizza boxes. There's different regulations that need to be followed as well, just in terms of French versus English. So it's something that's important. It's a detail that's very important. Obviously in their stores as well, menu boards, things like that. So it's just like anything. I mean, just know who your market is, know the message you need to get to them. And if that involves a different dialect or a different language, then just make sure that you're being aware of it and following the rules. So it's actually not that complicated, but you know, small mistakes could lead to large errors.
All right. So you were talking before about knowing your market and doing a strategy and understanding them. So you create all that for Papa John's in English, and then you translate that. And it gets interesting because it's a similar, I mean, it's Canadians, so it's the same country. It's not like you're crossing a border. Do you run into cultural nuances when you're translating for the language, even though it's in the same country?
Not too much. We haven't run into it yet. I mean, like I said, Montreal is a fairly new market that we're like, they're actually, Papa John's is expanding quite widely in the East right now as a whole. So we haven't run into that yet, but I mean, as even going to different countries when we could travel myself, you know, I always think back to, you know, a McDonald's in Germany that has, you know, very specific, you know, regional products, you know, versus in France, like versus like, so different places that I do think, you know, people have different tastes, right? Like it's like, what is it? It's I'm probably going to say this wrong, but like I know some people like poutine, like if you go to other countries, they're like, what is gravy and cheese on your fries? Like what? Why would you do that, right? But where something in, you know, Quebec, it's very popular. So yeah, I think we always have to be looking for what those nuances are, and you know, things like market research and making sure that we've got our I's dotted and our T's crossed on those things is really important. I mean, we had a brainstorm the other day in the company about really faux pas, right? So like, you know, share like faux pas of marketing that you've seen in the past and things that haven't really gone very well. And you know, one that always resonates with me that I don't know if I learned it in marketing school, but it's always stuck with me, but was when Gerber baby food went into, I believe it's Africa. And you know, I may have my story wrong, so give me some grace on that. But they went into Africa with the Gerber baby food, and it had the baby on the jar because they had like the little cute baby. And they didn't realize when they launched that what's on the jar is in the jar. Like that's the culture. So it didn't do so well because people were like, "Why is there a baby in this jar?" And you know, it's kind of funny, but it's also, you know, it's a great example of, if you don't know the market you're going into, if you don't do your research, you can have an epic fail. I mean, I think Target is one of the greatest case studies, you know, when Target tried to come into Canada, and you know, we all know how that went, not very well.
Yeah, tell me more about that.
So Target came into Canada, I don't even know, it must have been two, three years ago. And as someone who, whenever I go to the US, loved Target, right, as we call it, Target, yeah. You know, loved it, like just was so excited. And then it came to Canada and it didn't quite have the same model, right? So there was like a lot of empty shelves. The product wasn't the same product we were used to getting, you know, as travelers to the US. They took over, you know, big box. I think a lot of them took over, like we had a department store here called Zellers that ended up going out of business. So they took over old Zellers locations, and gosh, I don't even think they were here a year. Again, I'd have to do a bit of a refresh on that, but they were in and they were out, and you know, they didn't think of some of the nuances. They didn't bring the product in the same way. And, it was a sad disappointment. So we still have to go south of the border. When we can come south of the border again, or we order online. See, this is the full circle that we're talking about right here.
Right. So it sounds like when Target opened in Canada, they just didn't have a good process to do it. It's less about the culture and what was there, but if they came in, they just didn't implement well.
Yeah, it was just, I mean, if you ever want to kind of read up on it, it's a case study, and it, you know, it's a good one. It talks all about the mistakes they made, the missteps they took. I would not have wanted to be the CEO behind that one because it didn't go well.
Yeah. Do you remember some of the mistakes? Well, obviously you saw the results of some of the mistakes, is they didn't have a good thought out plan.
Yeah. And then didn't read their market. And again, I think that it must've been a bit of, it was, again, I don't know for sure, but it would have been supply chain, because there were just a lot of empty shelves a lot of the time. And it was, it was disappointing, but business fails, business wins, they happen.
Right, right, exactly. And I would bet in the future, depending on what happens with online buying, that they might try again. So
yeah, it's very possible. Yeah. We were working with another local company. They're like a bath and beauty company, I guess I'll just say. And you know, they kind of took over a very mom and pop organization in Alberta to further promote their offerings, grow the business, extend the product lines, and take the business online. And with COVID, their sales exploded. So they were very happy. They're in the process of also wanting to launch in the US and take the product over there and see where those other opportunities are going to lie. So, I mean, when we talk about going online versus being retail, you know, one of their strategies was they would be in malls, they would do mall kiosks, they would do trade shows, craft fairs and trade shows with their product. So it was mainly like bath bombs, creams, those types of things when I say bath and beauty. Mm-hmm. And they found that going online was working really well for them. But when COVID hit, especially because they've got a bit of that, you know, natural ingredients piece, right? And people are very conscious right now about their health and, you know, sanitizing and being as clean as possible. But when doing that, you know, people don't want to put a lot of chemicals. Most people that I talk to don't want to also put a lot of chemicals into their bodies. So sometimes there's the perfect marriage of, you know, where you're at in your business cycle and what the world brings you that can just create a really beautiful marriage. And then on the flip side of that, you know, it's not, you could be at a point in your business cycle where, you know, I know some restaurant owners who were, you know, just in a, you know, ready to ramp up and, you know, open new locations and really take some chances. And, you know, then you see something happen and the intersection is very negative. So I think it's just a lesson to, like, no one could have foreseen COVID, I don't think. So like, we'll just put that aside, but, you know, following market trends and, you know, trying to keep your plan in place is really important because it can affect your business very much. And, you know, technology now is it's been pushed ahead exponentially faster than it would have been without this year of COVID, I think.
Right. I completely see that. So this bath and beauty company, they go online, they're selling in Canada, and they want to expand into the United States. So what would they need to change for their online selling to get to the US market?
Well, I think for them, it's determining what products they're going to take to the US, right? So do the products that work right now in Canada, are those same products going to resonate with the US market, right? So when you look at some of the bigger brands, right, like they have to do some research on where there's saturation, where's their competition, where's the price point, right? You look at like why can't I remember their name right now? The Body Shop. I was going to say Bath and Body because they've really taken over, but you know, the Body Shop for me, I'll probably age myself here. Like that was like when I was younger, that was where you got all your stuff, right? The creams, the stuff, but they, you know, from what I see, again, haven't been following it closely, I don't think they're as prevalent anymore, but you've got the Bath and Body Works, you've got the Lush, right? Like you've got the people that have come into the marketplace. So yeah, that'll be a big part of the strategy is understanding what products to take to market there, where the distribution happens from, what shipping is like. This is just a funny side story, but I have a side t-shirt business that I started during COVID, and we include, so all of the profits, went towards, the food bank. So it was like a not-for-profit kind of thing.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And yeah. And it was interesting because I found out that shipping a t-shirt in Edmonton to another address in Edmonton that I could drive to probably in like 45 minutes, like a Canada Post shipment, cost less than shipping to like Ontario, so like a completely different province, and very similar to shipping across the border.
Wait, shipping in town costs less? Then
no
shipping.
More.
Oh, cost more. You said cost less. Okay.
Oh, so yeah, sorry.
More.
It was it was the opposite of what you would expect, right? You'd think like, oh, if I'm going to ship something across the city, like it's not going to be that expensive. But if I'm going to ship something to the US or to like, you know, another province, it's going to cost me a little bit more. But it was really bizarre.
That is crazy. There's no logic behind that. So at that point, when you're doing your research, you go, well, I'm not going to advertise this here. I might as well advertise this in the US.
And to understand what those shipping models are, right? Because I think when we look at any online, like I think of Sage. And do you guys have Sage in the US? S-A-J-E?
I'm not familiar.
It's like an essential oils, you know, kind of like, I don't know, they sell diffusers and oils and things like that. So they're very popular here. And I mean, they have a really great, like order this much, get this much, order this much, get free shipping. And their customer service is impeccable. And I think that that's a big piece of building a loyal customer base, right? And I think that's whether you're in Canada or the US, that's a big piece of it. But you have to be able to make sure that your supply chain can handle it, really is kind of the moral of the story, right? Like, right. I mentioned Sage because I had an experience with them just last week where I had an order and it took a really long time to get here. But I expect that because everyone's ordering online. And they sent me a big apology and said, we're really sorry. I didn't even complain. They just sent it. And they said, we're going to send you a $40 gift card, like for the inconvenience. Like just, yeah. I mean, like that is the type of thing that creates lifelong loyal customers. And yeah. I think that, and I don't think that that will change. I think that people, you know, will continue to be loyal to brands that treat them well.
Right, right. Exactly. Yeah. So it's interesting. If you think about doing that. So could you take me through a process of, you know, somebody has a product that they want to sell in their local area, and then they have to do the research for other areas, but also knowing that they could be found by anybody online. So how do you optimize your website so somebody does find you versus doing the research and targeting an area or a population or a persona who can find you? So how would you as a company owner distinguish between the two?
So when we have clients that come in that are looking to get a product out to market or service, because it's both, we have a process. It's actually called the 4D process. So it's basically discover, distill, develop, and deploy. And so the purpose behind that is when we go into a discovery session with a client, we'll bring their key stakeholders, we'll bring our key stakeholders, and we'll get in a room and we'll really, through a customized session, get to the bottom of what that client is looking to do. So are they a startup? Are they, kind of like in the middle of their business life cycle? Are they a mature company with a new product they're looking to launch? So really digging in deep on what they do, what their goals are, who they perceive their target market to be, who they want their target market to be, what their budget is, hopes and dreams. It's one of the most fun pieces of working with a new client. So then once we're finished that discover session, we move into distill. And so that's where we take all that information that we heard with our strategy team, with our creative directors, with everyone that kind of has a hand in it. And we come back to the client with what those next steps look like. So we say, okay, we've had this session, we've heard you. Here's what we're recommending for next steps. And those next steps might include research, so much as to you said, are we going to look at going into other markets? Here's some research that we'd recommend to make sure we're hitting it right and we're not just guessing. Maybe there's some brand building that has to happen in there. Maybe there's a website that needs to be built. Here's what we think needs to be done. Mm-hmm. So what we hope happens at that point and often happens is they say, okay, yes, you've heard us. This sounds really good. Let's proceed. So then we move into develop. So the develop stage is where we might do things like market research, looking into other markets, looking into local markets. That can be done through, anything from qualitative or quantitative research, depending on research can get quite expensive. It's also quite important. So that's usually done at this stage. Then once we have all of the groundwork that we need, we start developing out what those pieces look like in terms of what the marketing collateral is, what the communications key messages are, all the things that need to happen to kind of bring everything to life or move it to market. And then deploy is exactly what it sounds like. It's just hitting the button and proceeding. So launching websites, launching social media channels, launching any traditional media, public relations, earned media, those types of things. Mm-hmm. And, you know, then there's a feedback loop at the end of that. So, I mean, that's kind of the strategy we use with all clients, whether they're looking at going into other markets or staying local, because we find that if you start with strategy, you're much better off than just, you know, like sometimes a client will come in and say, I want to do this thing. And so we say, okay, great. You know, who's your market? Everyone. And that happens more frequently than you think, right? It's everyone. I'm like, well, how could it be everyone, right? Like, I mean, like, it, well, maybe it is, or maybe you think it is, but like, we need to get a little more narrow on that so that we can, you know, if you have $50 billion, like maybe it can be everyone and we can do everything, but like, let's step this out, right? Like, let's put this into pieces. Let's put this into phases. Let's see where we can get some quick wins and develop a bit of a critical path for you.
So how do you, well, two questions. The first is, at what point on that journey would you bring up thinking about going global and thinking bigger if they haven't brought that to you in the Discover session?
I think we'd talk about it in the Discover session. And again, if it makes sense for the client, right? Not everybody has a product or service that needs to go global.
Identify they have the opportunity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. I think that, you know, when we do our pre-work to go into a session, we have those internal discussions about, like, you know, we already have some ideas about what we think maybe would be good for the client. So we discuss those things in those sessions. And, you know, sometimes it's things that people haven't even thought about, right? Like, I mean, I think there's a piece of it when you look at the local economy, right, and what you can do here and what you can produce here. And then you look at exporting in the traditional sense, right? So like, I'm just going to send out hops because I have hops, but I'm not actually going to make beer and export the beer. Like, it's almost like I'm just going to send my product out the door because I have it and I can make some money from it. So one of the things, you know, that we also look at with clients is like, if they have like a more raw product or whatever that looks like, is how can we use that to create a value add, right? Like, what can we do with your product to make it more than it is? And then use that product to go into other markets where maybe that doesn't already exist. So, you know, and make no mistake, we have some, you know, clients that come in that are very focused on what they want to do, what their product is, how they've developed it, and what their go-to-market strategy is. So not all clients come in, you know, kind of saying, what do we do? But we're just there to kind of be their sounding board and to give them advice to maybe think a little bit differently if that's something that they're open to. And then again, to help, you know, guide them at times to like, is it the TAP program at the Edmonton Chamber, right? Is that like, we just sent to our clients a bunch of them.
Can you elaborate a little bit more on the TAP program? I'm not familiar with that.
Yeah, so it used to be run through Economic Development Edmonton. Actually on the time that I was involved with them, I was on their board of directors, and it was a great program because it was an export program where they would bring in, you know, say it's a marketing company, you know, like we'll use hospitality as an example, because I think Strathcona Spirits went through this with TAP. Yeah. You know, they'll bring in a hospitality consultant. So you kind of have like a group of people around you helping you through the process, like through some grant, and then, you know, steering you in that direction. And EEDC would also, and I don't know if this was specifically through TAP, but like EEDC would, you know, take certain groups of people on trade missions, right? Like Token Bidders, I think, which is a local bidders company, like the bidders that you put in alcohol. I think they ended up taking them on a trade mission to Tokyo as well, or to Japan, just to kind of show them, like, you know, where their markets, make the connections, right? So it's really opening those doors for them, and just kind of like holding their hand a little bit, right? Because if they come to us, I mean, we're not a not-for-profit, we don't have grant funding, right? So if they come to us, we are going to seriously be billing for our services to help move them down that path. So, you know, if there are programs that they can use at a lower expense, or for free, then, you know, I was just going to say, there was a federal grant program that just came to our attention, I think like 2 months ago. And we looked at our clients that there was a fit with, and it basically gave you some grant funding towards research, some towards search engine optimization. There were different ways you could use it. And so we just kind of like sent that out to all our clients and, you know, said, hey, if you want to apply for this grant, here it is. If you want to use us for the services after, that's fantastic. If you want to use someone else, that's great too. But we just wanted you to know that this grant was available. So I think it's
interesting because both Canada and the US provide grants for companies that are trying to grow, particularly internationally in the US. You know, yeah. So the export grants. Yeah.
And I think a lot of that is like, I mean, it is, I would assume that it is the goal to create wealth, you know, as a government, right? So they want businesses to do well. They want them to export. They want them to grow. They want them to pay more taxes, really, right? Like is what it comes down to. You know, everyone wants a local success story that grows as well. Like that's a really nice feel good story. And so those grants kind of like help get people's brain going in that direction and then also give them the tools to be like slash money or education to be able to do that. So I encourage everyone to, you know, really just know, and it comes again off of my trade mission, which really, it did change my life. You know, just in terms of realizing that, you know, you can really just do anything that you want to do as a business. You have to be smart and strategic about it, and you have to put some horsepower behind it, right? Some time and money and energy and strategy. But
On the trade mission, let's jump back to that. You had never been to that area and you're kind of wondering, am I gonna get business from that? What were some of the biggest fears you had?
I think the biggest fears for me were culturally, just because, you know, I did a lot of research. I'm the type of person that I don't want to go into another culture not understanding it. I don't want to disrespect anyone unintentionally. I want to be very respectful of those nuances. So that was one of my biggest fears, is that I was going to do or say something stupid that was going to really offend somebody. And I didn't want to hurt people's feelings or say something, you know, that wasn't appropriate. So that was probably my biggest one. Did a lot of research, which ended up
being... Did the research help?
Yeah, it did. I mean, I think a lot of it was fairly obvious, just in terms of you know, some nuances, especially as a female being in that area. Like it, you definitely, right, like in terms of, you know, any skin, right, on the legs, like covering up. You know, obviously when going into the mosques, you know, you had to really cover up, which makes perfect sense. So yeah, none of it really surprised me. So that was one of my biggest fears. I think the other one was just the unknown, right? Like it was really far away. Like I love to travel, but it was a long flight and I was away for a long time. I got really used to it. It was incredibly warm, which was, I love the heat. So it was great. Actually, a funny side story. I remember we got to the hotel and I had a meeting. It must've been 3 or 4 minutes from the hotel. And I came out, like, I think it was like 45 degrees or something, maybe 50. It was really hot. And I remember I said to the guy at the front door, I said, I'm just going to go walk to my meeting. And he looked at me and he said, can I get you a taxi? And I said, no, I'm just going to walk. It's like 4 minutes. We just arrived. And he just handed me a bottle of water and he said, good luck. And I started walking. In about 1 minute on my walk, I was just drenched. Like I was like, it is so hot. Like I was like trying to breathe, like it was so hot. So by the time I got to my meeting, it was 4 minutes away. I looked terrible, right? Like I'm wearing a suit, like I looked bad. So after that, I learned that you take taxis. And also the most interesting thing, not the most, but one of the more interesting things I found when I was there is that they actually have outdoor patios, but the outdoor patios have outdoor, like, huge cooling stations that spray water on you and like big AC all around the patio, just like you would in a cold climate, like where I live, it's snowing outside right now, you know, where you would have heaters. So I was like, what is that? And nobody was sitting outside, right? And, you know, and then you saw someone walking their dog, but it was like they walked them like in and out because it's hot for animals. So it was, and that was really, I don't know, it was interesting to me. But I love the heat, so that was okay. But yeah, like those were really my only fears. Like, I mean, I'll never forget that someone on the mission with me said, you get out of it what you put into it, right? So like you can go to as many meetings as you want. You can set up as many separate networking things as you want. You can go for as many dinners as you want. Like here's the schedule and what you do outside of that, you get back what you put in. And I mean, I hustled when I was there. I had tons of extra meetings. I made connections. I went for dinners with people. At the time, I was on the Edmonton Chamber of Commerce board, who was part of a larger kind of World Trade Center group. And so I used a connection there and got a meeting at the World Trade Center in Abu Dhabi and had a meeting with their executive director. So I tried to work all the connections I had to get to meet the most amount of people and optimize my time the best I could. So it was, it was a life-changing experience. And I really hope I'll be back one day. I'm sure I will, but it's not just a small jaunt.
Yes. No, it's not. Yeah. So it sounds like it's triggered you definitely go to some other places now too, to do business. It's opened the door.
Yeah, absolutely. And to encourage clients that it's possible, right? Like going back to Strathcona Spirits, like that's a success story, right? I mean, if you can share some of those stories, like I think people sometimes just need to be able to see themselves in those shoes, right? Like, well, if they can do it, I can do it, right? Like, I mean, if the little engine that could did it, then, you know, anyone clearly should be able to do it. And I remember, again, that's one of the things that Lisa said to me when we went to Dubai, because she had me write my bio and I wrote my bio and she kind of gave it back to me and she said, this is terrible. Like, she's like, I know you. This is like, can you talk yourself up a little bit? Like, this is so, like, it's vanilla. Like, you can't take this to Dubai. Like, when you go to Dubai, you need to be like, I'm awesome. I do awesome things. Do awesome things with me. But like, I'm not like that. And Edmontonians, again, for the most part, aren't really like that. So that was one of the things that she said when we went on this mission. It was like most of the people, she had to help them, you know, be more expressive about what they'd done in their biographies, because there was this humility of just like, no, it's, that's just what I do. And so I think sometimes, you know, we need to think that way too. We need to be okay with shouting from the rooftops a little more of the successes we've had here in this great city and, you know, and that we'll continue to have.
That's so interesting, because I think a lot of times Americans are laughed at for selling themselves too much. And so you're talking from a Canadian point of view, you don't sell yourself enough. So have you ever heard that about Americans, or would you see that? Or
yeah, I mean, so I worked in Chicago for about a year, and that would have been right after Dubai and Abu Dhabi. So that was probably 5 years ago now-ish. So I was actually going back and forth every other week for a year. So kind of like via Zag, but doing a project there and traveling. So when I was in the US doing business every other week, it was literally like going into two different like vortexes, because like I'd go to the US and it would just be like, all good, all quick, get things done. Like I could go to a Starbucks in Chicago, there would be a lineup in my tower of 50 people. And I think I'm toast. Like I can't, I'm not going to be able to get this coffee. That lineup would be cleared in 3 minutes. Like it was incredible. Like I couldn't believe it. The efficiency, and just like, there'd be two people and they would just like, it was all hustle, all go. It was very different than what I was used to. Then I would come back to Canada and I would go into a Starbucks with two people like waiting. It would take me 15 minutes to get my coffee. There'd be three people behind the counter, and, you know, and then it was back to like, just really like a slower, I don't know if slower is the right word, but just a different pace in terms of how things are treated and how people act. And so it was really mind blowing to me, because it was just so like different, polarly different every other week. And I had to kind of sometimes catch myself as to where I was, right? Because because if I came back to Canada and got annoyed because things weren't moving fast enough, that wasn't helping anything. And if I went to the US and I didn't move fast enough, that wasn't helping the business I was running there. So it was just like, it was interesting.
It is. And I think that's the thing, is as long as you can identify it, recognize where you are, and then operate in that system, that's what makes you successful in working with different cultures.
Yeah. And knowing that everyone's different, right? And like, and that's a beautiful thing, right? Like it's beautiful that people have a different way of communicating and a different pace. And because I believe they all teach us different things, right? Like, I mean, the American culture taught me, you know, how to hustle a little faster, and the Canadian culture reminded me of taking a breath and appreciating things. And I think we can learn from all different types of diversity, for sure.
Right. All right. So we're getting to the end of our time. So I want to switch to some personal questions for you. First, sure. What's your favorite foreign word?
Favorite foreign word. You know what word I love just from some of my travel in Europe, just being in different countries and then learning like the different dialects, not that I'm an expert at any of them. I loved just saying ciao.
Ciao.
Because it was just so, it just felt so ciao. I don't know. Just something about it always stuck with me. It was like my favorite time when I was able to say that.
Oh, that's great. And that's an Italian word, but it is used in so many different places.
Yeah, it is. But it was always like, you know, if you were going from like, say, France to Italy and like you'd switch over from like the au revoir or the bonjour. And so it was just, yeah, that would have to be. I don't mean, I don't know a ton of them, but that's one of my favorite to use anyways.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. All right. Your favorite vacation?
Oh, wow. Ever?
Sure. I'm sure you haven't had many this past year.
Yeah, I mean, I would take anything right now. I'm not going to lie. You know what? I really loved Nashville. Like I've been to some pretty cool places. But the reason I love Nashville is because I was never a country music fan and became one after Nashville. Cause it grew on me. And, it was just such a different experience and the people were lovely and it was, so I'll throw that out there. That was a pretty, pretty wonderful trip.
Oh, good for you. Yeah. I love
And I got to see Jack Johnson live and he's one of my favorite artists and I got to see him in this beautiful outdoor amphitheater on a warm summer night. So, I mean, that made it just put it over the top.
That's great. And how about your most rewarding cross-cultural experience?
Oh, wow. That's a good one.
Most rewarding or memorable. It could be funny or, you know, you made
it. Yeah, I'm sure I have a lot of them if I really thought about it. Like, I'm trying to think of the times I've been to Europe, but I mean, the reason I'm hesitating is because we've talked so much about Dubai and Abu Dhabi already. So I'm trying to think of something different. But I mean, if I had to pick one off the top, like I think that was my most rewarding experience. I mean, being able to go to the mosque in Abu Dhabi was just an incredible experience. It was such a wonderful place. It just felt special. And so I think that to me was probably number one that I can think of off the top.
Yeah. And favorite place to do business?
Right here in Edmonton.
That's surprising how many people pick their local place. So occasionally I'll ask favorite place outside of your home country to do business. But
I love it here. I mean, the people here are just really wonderful and it's such a community and it's, you know, people will help other people and it's just, it's really warm. I really love it.
Oh, good. Well, thank you so much. Where can people reach you if they want to get in touch or have more questions for you?
Sure. So my email is alison@azag.ca. So that's alison@azag.ca. And our website is www.a2zag.ca. So if people want to find out a little bit more about us, they can go there, find all of our social media channels or drop me a direct line. I'd be happy to chat anytime.
Okay. Thank you so much. Well, thank you, listeners, for joining us today and listening to Alison's story. As you can see, it's just as simple as getting out there and connecting with people all over the place and doing a little bit of research before you go international to save you some embarrassing steps. But, you know, you can always call us and we can give you the highlights of what to know. And when I say us at Rapport International. If you learned something today or you know somebody who would be interested in global marketing, please forward this episode along or give us a rating. Really appreciate it. You can always find us on iTunes, Spotify, or your other favorite places to listen. Stay warm, stay safe.
That's a wrap for this session. A big thanks to you for listening to the Global Marketing Show. Hope you had just as much fun as I did. New sessions launch weekly on all places you find podcasts, Apple, Spotify, Google Play, and of course on our website. If you know someone interested in this topic, please tell them about us. Au revoir for now.